Greetings and welcome to my podcast. My name is Todd Lorenz. That's T-O-D-D-L-O-R-E-N-Z. I think cryptids exist that science should recognize. I don't think Lee Harvey Oswald had a thing to do with the murder of John F. Kennedy. I don't think we know the truth about what happened on 9/11. I think the United States should meddle in foreign affairs as little as possible. And I believe the vast majority of politicians are corrupt. But hey, that's just what I think. And I could be wrong.
That's what I think, but I could be wrong. That's what I thought when I wrote this song. I say what I believe and I say it's wrong. That's what I think, but I could be wrong.
Oh, that sounds pretty good to me. And there you have the name of the show. That's what I think, but I could be wrong. Inspired by a song I released back on 9/15/2008 called I Could Be Wrong. It's available on my website, toddlorenz.com. This podcast can be found at toddlorenz.com/podcast or your favorite podcast directory. You might be wondering what this show is all about. Well, I plan to discuss just about anything that holds my interest, and usually that means something that comes with a touch of controversy. Future show topics include the following: a discussion of whether or not we are an inherently violent species, Donald Trump, our illustrious president, how's he doing? I'll take a look at school shootings and mass shootings and the circumstances that surround them. Are there commonalities? Is there perhaps some kind of root cause? Scientology. Is it all just a big scam or just legitimate networking? Maybe even a decent religion. The legalization of all recreational drugs. Serial killers. Either the topic in general or perhaps specific ones. I admit to being fascinated with the topic. The history of income tax in this country. What was its original purpose? Was it instituted legally? And I'll probably get into any number of conspiracy theories. There are plenty of them out there that I find fascinating. The next show, episode 2, I will discuss the mother of all cryptid creatures, Bigfoot. I've been fascinated with this creature since I was a kid. My first memory of it was seeing the Patterson-Gimlin film on an old show called In Search Of that was hosted or narrated by Leonard Nimoy. But now, let's get into the topic for this show. Show notes and references should be listed within the podcast description and will be posted on the podcast webpage, toddlorenz.com/podcast. I want you to use your imagination for a moment. Picture yourself on a nature walk. If that's not your thing, maybe you're out bird watching with a pair of binoculars. Or maybe you're a hunter, out looking for your first buck of the season, scanning the woods. Maybe you're a bow hunter, doing the same kind of thing. You can see all the sights and hear all the sounds that nature has to offer, and it's soothing. But then, all of a sudden, you realize the sounds are gone. It's become deathly quiet. It's unnatural, and it makes you feel uneasy. You're sure there's something wrong. Then, out of the corner of your eye, you catch some motion. You take a closer look, either with your naked eye or with a magnifying device, binoculars, or the scope on your rifle. And you see what looks like a big wolf. It's sitting there on all fours, and it's got its nose in the air sniffing, and you wonder if it's catching your scent. Then, it stands up on two legs and starts to walk towards you. You realize it's larger than any wolf has any right to be, and the fact that it's walking on two legs is unnerving. It seems unnatural, yet this thing is doing it and doing it easily. For a second or two, you wonder if maybe you're seeing a bear, but no, that's not right. A bear can walk on two legs uncomfortably for a few feet, but that's it. This thing is moving gracefully and with purpose, and it is scary. The closer it gets, the more you can identify its features. The ears look like that of a German Shepherd, and it has a similar head, but larger. Muzzle sticks out. The teeth. It pulls its lips back and reveals its teeth in kind of a snarl, and there are more teeth than there should be, and they're longer and sharper, and oh my God, what is this thing? And it's so huge, and it's so muscular, it looks like a bodybuilder or something, but it's on two legs, and it's a wolf. What the hell is this thing? You have just seen a dog man. It's also called an upright wolf, or an upright canine, and some might even classify it as a kind of Bigfoot, but most think of it as its own creature. The Dogman and Bigfoot, or Sasquatch, do share some common characteristics, most notably the ability to naturally run and walk on two legs. However, both creatures have been allegedly sighted on four legs as well. Their differences are the ones you'd expect between an ape and a wolf or dog. Think about the teeth for a moment. An ape is supposed to have canines, just a couple, same as a Sasquatch. But a dogman? Think about what a wolf has, but more and sharper, scarier. They've been called razor sharp. Sasquatch is supposed to have a strong, distinctive odor, especially the ones in Florida. They're referred to as skunk apes. I've heard people theorize they can emit the scent on demand as a kind of warning. Some believe it happens automatically when they're agitated. If Sasquatch is a kind of ape, that would make sense. Gorillas have large scent glands in their armpits that produce a rather pungent odor when they're excited or stressed. There is sometimes a smell associated with dogmen, but it's not the same. The scent has been described as a wet, urine-covered dog, or something like a dead animal or a rotting flesh, things along those lines. If this dogman creature exists, I do not believe it's the same thing as a werewolf. It's not a lycanthrope. It's not a man that changes into a wolf, either at will or by the light of a full moon or whatever. It is what it is all the time, whether that means it's an animal that evolved into a bipedal wolf, or perhaps is the product of genetic manipulation, as some have speculated. Having said that, eyewitnesses often say that the werewolf in Van Helsing or the werewolves in the Underworld films are the closest to what they saw in terms of physical appearance. I'd also say that the Dogman is not a skinwalker. What's a skinwalker, you ask? I suppose I may do a show on it at some point. For now, suffice it to say that, according to Navajo legend, a skinwalker is a medicine man or witch who has attained the highest level of priesthood in the tribe, but chose to use his or her power for evil by taking the form of an animal to inflict pain and suffering on others. To become a skinwalker requires the most evil of deeds, the killing of a close family member. They become humans who have acquired immense supernatural power, including the ability to transform into animals and other people. So again, like the werewolf, a dogman is not a skinwalker. So if it's not a werewolf and it's not a skinwalker, what exactly is the dogman? Well, technically, we don't really know. It's not like this thing is recognized scientifically, and you certainly can't go down to your local zoo and get a look. But eyewitness reports and encounters tell us that we have two basic types. Now, within each type, there are variances. No two animals look exactly alike unless they're twins. One type is often referred to as the canine type because it resembles a giant dog or wolf walking on two legs. Witnesses will often say the legs bent backwards, and that's not exactly the case. Think of a dog up on its hind legs. It kind of looks like their knees go backwards, but that's not it. It's more like they're equivalent to our ankles and knees are placed differently on their legs. Canine-type dogmen are seen far more frequently than the other type, which are referred to as type 3 dogmen. These creatures look like a Sasquatch with a wolf's head. Large, muscular beings with human-like knees and ankles, and they have hands as well. The canine types have fingers that look more like what you see with raccoons, with long claws attached. Another difference is that the canine types all have tails, like you'd see on a dog or wolf. The type 3s lack a tail. So how far back does the idea or legend of dogmen go? Well, depending on how you interpret it, pretty far. How about as far back as 3100 BC? That's how old Anubis is. Anubis is an ancient Egyptian deity, often depicted as a man with the head of a dog, or jackal. According to Wikipedia, the animal has now been reclassified as the African golden wolf. Modern witnesses often report that the head of the dogman they see resembles that of Anubis. Isn't that interesting? Is it possible that whatever inspired the original depictions of Anubis is somehow alive and well today, or at least some form of it? And sightings aren't limited to wilderness areas or the country or forests. There are plenty of reports of this thing in the city or suburban areas. Does that seem likely? No, it's rather unbelievable. Never mind a dogman, mythical creature, or werewolf running around the city. Just the idea of a wild animal cruising around downtown seems odd, right? Well, it does happen from time to time with animals that are recognized. In April of 2008, a mountain lion was killed in Chicago. In July of 2015, another one was spotted in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. The more human beings seem to encroach into wildlife habitats, the more they seem to come into ours. If scavengers like raccoons and coyotes find easy meals in our cities, why wouldn't dogmen? Another ancient myth or legend that may have its roots with dogmen is that of cynocephalus, or the plural cynocephali. The cynocephalus was a man with the head of a dog. They could understand language, but could not speak. They're sometimes shown in artwork as being civilized, but by all reports were savage beasts who lived to hunt and kill. Yes, it does sound like a simple legend or myth or fabrication, but these men were described in reports by famous explorers such as Christopher Columbus and Marco Polo. Around 400 BC, the Greek physician Ctesias wrote the following, quote, "They speak no language, but bark like dogs, and in this manner make themselves understood by each other. Their teeth are larger than those of dogs, their nails like those of these animals, but longer and rounder. They inhabit the mountains as far as the river Indus. Their complexion is swarthy. They are extremely just, like the rest of the Indians with whom they associate. They understand the Indian language, but are unable to converse, only barking or making signs with their hands and fingers by way of reply. They live on raw meat. They number about 120,000. End quote. When they killed an animal, they roasted it in the sun. They raised their own livestock, including sheep and goats and donkeys. They drank sheep's milk. They ate fruit. Here's another quote from Dr. Ctesias. Quote, "They make rafts, which they load with fruit together with well-cleaned purple flowers and 260 talents of amber, with the same quantity of the purple dye, and 1,000 additional talents of amber, which they send annually to the King of India." I'll pause the quote here for a moment because I had to look up the definition of a talent. It was a unit of measurement for weight, equal to about 75 pounds or 35 kilograms. Resuming quote, "They exchange the rest for bread, flour, and cotton stuffs with the Indians, from whom they also buy swords for hunting wild beasts, bows and arrows, being very skillful in drawing the bow and hurling the spear. They cannot be defeated in war, since they inhabit lofty and inaccessible mountains. Every 5 years, the king sends them a present of 300,000 bows, as many spears, 120,000 shields, and 50,000 swords." End quote. They were said to be a fierce warrior tribe, but they did apparently trade with the few humans they trusted. They lived mainly between India and northern Africa, but were seen in places in between. Their lifespan was up to 200 years. So how about that? These creatures, these dog-headed men, traded with the king. They gave up goods for weapons. If that's the case, how bright was this king? I mean, this is a fierce warrior tribe that could not be defeated in war, and he's arming them. Wouldn't that be like Trump giving Uzis to the Democrats? I know, Trump isn't our king, and guns aren't something to joke about, but it's my show, and I thought it was funny. Moving along. Before I get into modern sightings and encounters, I want to talk about one more legend. This is a Native American tale about the first to receive the gift of the werewolf. It takes place in Wisconsin, or what is now Wisconsin, and that'll be important later. The legend states there's a spirit god named Weezikachek, and I hope that Native Americans will forgive any horrible pronunciations. Weezikachek was a shapeshifter who lived in the woods. He was a friend to humans, and his default physical form was a wolf. One day, Weezikachek was in the woods in the form of a man when he saw two brothers from the fox tribe hunting. The boys, named Kime and Macheteyu, had caught a deer with their bows and arrows. Weezikachek approached the boys and presented himself as a lost, hungry wanderer from a different tribe. Kime offered some of their deer meat. Weezikachek accepted. About a week later, Weezikachek appeared in the same part of the woods again and saw the same boys hunting. Macheteyu explained that ever since they caught the deer a week earlier, they hadn't been able to catch a thing, and they were very hungry. Weezikachek, remembering their generosity, told them he had no meat to offer, but he could share with them his power to shapeshift into a wolf so they could catch deer more easily. At first, the boys didn't believe him, but when Weezikachek transformed into a wolf and back to a man in front of their eyes, they excitedly agreed. The only condition was that they were not to use their wolf forms to hurt any humans, only to hunt. Time went by, and the boys used their wolf forms to catch enough deer for the entire village. One day, Macheteyu was in an argument with another boy in the village, and in his anger, Macheteyu transformed into a wolf and killed his opponent. The two brothers, Macheteyu and Kime, were both cast out of the tribe and forced to live in the woods. Weezikachek was furious. He cast a new spell on Macheteyu so that from that day on he would no longer be able to shapeshift at will. Every day he would take on a complete human form, and every night he would transform into a mindless wolf. Kime, having done no wrong, was allowed to keep his shapeshifting ability. But, being cast out from the fox tribe and knowing that Macheteyu would be unable to control himself in his wolf form, Kime went off into the wilderness on his own. Macheteyu is now known as the father of werewolves, being the first one and creating more. Now then, a legend is defined as an unverified story handed down from earlier times, especially one popularly believed to be historical. I also generally think of a legend as a way of explaining something otherwise unknown. Same as religion, I suppose, in some ways. In any case, the fact that this legend takes place in Wisconsin is relevant. Why? Well, because the modern sightings of dogmen or werewolves, or what some call man-wolves, began in, well, you guessed it, Wisconsin, and not too far from where I'm sitting. The first modern sighting was in 1936 in Jefferson County, Wisconsin. Again, my sources are listed on the podcast webpage. According to the site I'm reading, it involved a gentleman named Mark Shackleman, who was driving along Highway 18 just outside Jefferson, Wisconsin, when he noticed someone digging in a field on the side of the road, or off the side of the road. The site was a location where a Native American burial ground was supposed to be. When Shackleman slowed down to get a better look, the quote-unquote man turned to face him. It was a hairy creature that stood on two legs, which Shackleman described as a mix between an ape and a dog. The creature had the general shape of a large man, and Shackleman noted opposable thumbs. Shackleman drove off in a hurry, but remained curious and returned the next night. He saw the creature in the same area, and this time the beast growled at him in a way that sounded eerily human, with a word he described as Gadara. Now then, Linda Godfrey, whom I will talk about more later, she's kind of the godfather or godmother, I suppose, of modern dogman sightings, provides slightly different details. According to her book, titled The Michigan Dogman, Werewolves, and Other Unknown Canines Across the USA, as well as her blog, Mr. Shackleman was a night watchman in the area where the sighting took place, and the creature was supposedly digging in a Native American burial ground. According to her, Gadara may refer to a region of old Judea where the New Testament states Jesus cast spirits out of two demon-possessed men. Or Gadara could have been just some guttural growling noise this creature made. The next sighting also took place in Jefferson County, Wisconsin, this time in 1964. Dennis Fewless, F-E-W-L-E-S-S, was driving along Highway 89 around midnight when he saw a figure running across the road. His headlights caught the creature, and it appeared similar to the werewolf seen in our previous encounter back in 1936, and he was only a few miles away from where Mr. Shackleman had his encounter. He also described a large, muscular creature around 7 feet tall, covered in dark brown hair with a dog-like face. Fewless says the creature ran across the road, jumped over a barbed wire fence, and disappeared into a cornfield. The next day, once the sun was up, and who can blame him for that, he returned to the scene. He hoped to find tracks to prove the size of the creature, but the ground was too hard. He did find the place in the cornfield where the dog man entered. The stalks of corn were broken in a way that supported his idea of the animal's size. For sighting number 3, we go to 1972, but remain in Jefferson County, Wisconsin. The witness chose to remain anonymous. A woman called 911 when she heard someone trying to break into her home in the middle of the night. Upon further investigation, it appeared she wasn't dealing with a person, but rather with a large animal that tried to get in. A few weeks later, the creature returned and again tried to enter the house. This time she saw it. She described it as near 8 feet tall, covered in dark brown hair, and stood on two legs. It had long arms and human-like hands, but with long, sharp claws attached. When the creature could not get inside the house, it went out to the woman's barn and attacked a horse. The horse survived, but had a 30-inch gash across its neck. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources investigated and found a footprint that was said to be over a foot long. Linda Godfrey also recounts this story and adds a couple of other details. She says the animal left deep scratches in the siding of the woman's home, 7 feet off the ground. Miss Godfrey also interviewed a former Department of Natural Resources warden named David Getson, G-J-E-T-S-O-N, who was involved with the investigation. He found the witness very credible and sincere. The next few encounters take place in Elkhorn, Wisconsin. Elkhorn is in Walworth County and is roughly an hour's drive away from Jefferson County. In 1989, a woman named Lorianne Edrizzi, E-N-D-R-I-Z-Z-I, saw a large figure on the side of the road. As she got close, she realized it wasn't a person, but a tall beast covered in gray-brown hair with a dog-like face, featuring fangs, pointed ears, and glowing yellow eyes. Also in 1989, a dairy farmer named Scott Bray, B-R-A-Y, owned a cattle pasture near his family's namesake street, Bray Road. he reported seeing a dog, larger and taller than a German Shepherd, in his pasture. The creature was muscular and heavy, covered in gray-brown hair with pointed ears. Bray was able to find footprints larger than any known dog or wolf in his pasture the next day. Also in 1989, Russell Guest, G-E-S-T, saw a large dog-like creature at Elkhorn. He described it in a manner similar to the previous two reports, and said the creature stood on its hind legs and began to slowly approach him before he ran away. In 1990, an 11-year-old girl named Heather Bowie, B-O-W-E-Y, saw what she thought was a large dog stand up on its hind legs and run away. She lived near Bray Road. In 1992, Tammy Bray, Scott Bray's wife, was driving back to her home when she saw the creature. She also described a tall, broad-shouldered, and muscular beast covered in dark brown hair. The dog-like face and glowing yellow eyes matched the previous descriptions, though at this point other sightings had not been widely reported. And on Halloween in 1999, an 18-year-old woman named Doristine Gibson, G-I-P-S-O-N, first name D-O-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, was driving along Bray Road when her car suddenly jerked as though she hit something. She got out and walked back along the road trying to see what happened, and she caught sight of what she hit. A huge, dark, hairy figure began rushing toward her. She ran back into her car and began to drive away. The beast jumped onto the hood of her car, but because it had been raining and the vehicle was wet, the animal could not hold on and fell to the ground. Gibson said she drove back to the location that same night with a young trick-or-treater, and they both saw a figure laying on the side of the road. They did not stay long. There's one more encounter I want to talk about, but before I do, I want to introduce you to Linda Godfrey. She is an author, investigator, and artist, and has written 17 books on strange creatures, phenomena, and people. She's a frequent guest on national TV and radio shows, and has been on Monster Quest Seasons 1 and 4, Fox News Red Eye, Lost Tapes, Monsters and Mysteries, Sean Hannity's America, Inside Edition, Coast to Coast AM, Wisconsin Public Radio, The Jenny McCarthy Show, and many more. She lives in the Kettle Moraine area of South Wisconsin with her husband and monster dog. Not Dogman, Grendel. A number of the titles in her catalog include books devoted specifically to the Dogman, including the following: The Beast of Bray Road, Tailing Wisconsin's Werewolf, Real Wolfmen, True Encounters in Modern America, Hunting the American Werewolf, The Michigan Dogman, Werewolves and Other Unknown Canines Across the USA, and there are some Dogman stories included in Monsters of Wisconsin, Mysterious Creatures in the Badger State. She's also written a number of other books, including American Monsters, A History of Monster Lore, Legends, and Sightings in America, and Monsters Among Us, an exploration of otherworldly Bigfoots, Wolfmen, Portals, Phantoms, and Odd Phenomena. She has written some fiction, but all the books I've just mentioned are considered nonfiction. She writes about myths, legends, and tales, but also heavily documents eyewitness reports. One of her first stories involved the Beast of Bray Road, and that's the tale I'm discussing next. The following is from her sightings page on her beastofbrayroad.com website, which is now largely defunct or ignored in favor of lindagodfrey.com, lindagodfrey.com. And again, my references will be listed on the podcast website and should be in the podcast show notes. Two Milwaukee TV stations, WTMJ Channel 4 and WISN Channel 12, reported November 9th and 10th, 2006. That Steven Kruger, 39, a contractor who picks up roadkill for Washington and several other counties in southern Wisconsin, had an encounter with a Bigfoot. Ms. Godfrey conducted a lengthy phone interview with Mr. Krueger on November the 10th and discovered that while he did have a strange experience with an unidentifiable creature, it was not a Bigfoot. According to Krueger, he was making his usual rounds the night of November 8th when at about 1:30 a.m. on the morning of November 9th, he spotted a 70 to 80 pound deer that wasn't on his pickup list on Highway 167, approximately 0.165 miles east of the Holy Hill entrance on Church Road. He picked up the deer anyway, noting it was still limp and probably freshly killed. Krueger stands 6 feet tall and weighs 230 pounds and was able to hoist the carcass into the truck with some effort. After getting the deer into the truck bed, he left the tailgate down and got into his cab to make notes. He also left on the light that illuminates the truck bed and, in compliance with DOT, Department of Transportation, regulations, is flashing amber light on top of the cab. He had the windows rolled up and the radio playing loudly. He says, quote, "The first thing I knew about it was when the truck shook. I thought it might be the wind, but then it happened again, only stronger. I looked in the rearview mirror and I saw it. It was standing on the ground, bent over the tailgate, reaching into the back of the truck. It had its paw out and the deer by one paw. I froze for a few seconds from being shocked, threw the truck in the drive, and stepped on it to get out of there." Unquote. Krueger estimates he looked at the creature for about 5 seconds before flooring the gas pedal. Quote, "It had pointy ears, triangular shaped, and they looked like big wolf ears standing up on end. That was the main feature that made me realize it wasn't a bear. It had a longer muzzle than a black bear, and its head was more like a wolf than a bear. It almost looked like a very large black bear standing on its feet if you took a wolf's head and enlarged it and set it on the bear's body." End quote. Krueger guessed the creature's height at 6 to 7 feet, but he could only see it from the chest up. He said it was not a Bigfoot. As he drove away, he heard a metallic clang, which he recognized as one of the aluminum fold-up ramps he uses to help drag large specimens into the truck bed. Folded up, the ramp is about 1.5 feet wide by 2.5 feet long. He guessed that it was tangled up in the legs of the deer he had just thrown in, because both the ramp and the deer were then pulled clear of the truck. He drove a short distance away, but decided he wanted to go back and see if he could retrieve the ramp. He drove back, got out of the truck for about 2 seconds, mindful that the creature could still be around. He did not notice any odor, nor did he see the creature, and both the deer and ramp had vanished. Krueger continued his rounds until about 4:30 a.m., trying to decide if he should report it. He was afraid of being ridiculed, but finally decided that this was something large enough to be dangerous and that the sheriff should be alerted. He drove to the sheriff's department in West Bend, walked in, and made his report. Quote, "I was afraid it would take a Bigfoot turn," end quote, though he was careful not to say that word. But a TV employee later told him that the deputy who handled his report wrote that it was a, quote, "Yeti," unquote, sighting. Said Krueger, quote, "I told them it looked like a bear, but was not a bear. I never said it was a Bigfoot," end quote. He also says he's observed everything from wolves to coyotes feeding on deer carcasses late at night. Krueger said the sheriff's deputy asked if it could have been a person in a fur suit. Krueger chuckled and explained that the deer he picked up wasn't on his list and no one knows his route on any given night. Quote, "Would someone sit in the woods and wait 48 hours for me to come along just to scare me? It didn't look like a human configuration," end quote. As for gathering evidence, Krueger said he could see no prints left in the truck bed, which was full of other carcasses, hair, and blood. He also said, quote, "I know what a bear looks like, and this was not a bear," end quote. Krueger does say he's sorry he reported the incident to the sheriff's department. Ms. Godfrey says this is exactly the reason that most sightings are probably kept secret, preventing the public from ever knowing the true scope of these creatures' existence and thwarting an accurate database. I specifically wanted to discuss this encounter because it was investigated by an author and reporter and involved a person who did contract work for a state governmental body and someone who is familiar with local wildlife. He also involved law enforcement. Now, why would a man do all that if he wasn't reasonably sure about what he saw? And yes, he was scared, but he made his decision to report it because he thought the creature might be dangerous. And I'll tell you what, if this happened within a few miles from my home, I'd want to know about it. How many wild animals are bold enough to go yank something out of a running, occupied vehicle? Not too many. I've heard talk recently on a few podcasts that wild animals seem to be losing their fear of human beings, and if that's the case, this is something of which we need to be aware. How would it affect you if a wolf somehow pulled something out of your vehicle, your truck, or the trunk of your car, while you sat in the driver's seat? Wouldn't that be a little freaky? And what if the thing didn't look like a wolf? What if it looked like something out of a horror movie? How scared would you be? Would you want to talk about it? How much of an effect would it have on your life if you saw something that most of the world says doesn't exist? You might be afraid of ridicule. What if you told some friends and family members and they just laughed at you? Maybe you go along with a joke, but deep down inside, it might bother you. It might have some sort of trauma that might even be equated with post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD. And trust me, there are a lot of witnesses out there who finally do come forward, and often you can hear the fear in their voice. I don't mean the written accounts I've been reading. I'm talking about podcasts and YouTube channels that talk to eyewitnesses. They are becoming very popular. The stories are often compelling, chilling, and horrifying, and sometimes all three. I'm going to mention a few of the shows I listen to, and again, links will be on the podcast webpage and should be in the show notes as well. The first show I know of dedicated to Dogman Encounters is called, ironically enough, Dogman Encounters Radio, hosted by Vic Cundiff. One can listen to his show commercial-free for a modest subscription. I believe it's $2.99 a month. Or listen for free on YouTube, but those shows include advertisements. The show is a forum for those who have seen these creatures to share their encounters. There's lots of amazing eyewitness testimony. My favorite episodes are probably 76 and 85, involving the same gentleman, Jay Tucker. In episode 76, a dog man charges his car as he speeds down a highway. He thinks it would have knocked over the vehicle if they collided. The creature was that big. In episode 85, he hunts a dog man with two other men. They manage to wound the animal, but it took a .338 caliber weapon to do it. Standard automatic weapons had no effect. The story's horrifying. If it's true, we should all be scared of these things. Sasquatch Chronicles is Wes Germer's show. He has 413 episodes as I record this, and roughly every other one is freely available. Wes's show is also a forum for those who wish to share their encounters. He covers mainly Bigfoot or Sasquatch, but he does also include episodes about the Dogman. Wes used to doubt the Dogman was real, but became convinced by the number of reports he received and the consistency of the witnesses. Most of them describe one of the two types I mentioned earlier. Wes started his show because he and his brother had an encounter with Sasquatch that kind of changed their lives. Cryptid Brothers Investigations is a fairly new show, and as I record this, is only available on YouTube. They're also dedicated to letting witnesses tell their stories, and they're based in Oklahoma. They deal with both Sasquatch and the Dogman. And finally, there's Dark Waters. Dark Waters is a horror show that started out on YouTube, but he now has his own website that is subscription-based though he does have plenty of free content. He retells witness encounters using narration, music, and sound effects. It's somewhat similar to old-timey radio, and the Dogman stories seem to be his most popular. As part of his vetting process, Dark Waters used to meet witnesses in person and visit the sites where their encounters took place. However, he has stopped visiting locations, and I believe it's because of a close call he had with Dogman. He visited an encounter site with the witness, and as the sun went down, they heard Dogman, they heard something crashing through the forest bordering the road. The witness got in his truck and bailed out. Dark Waters was left behind. Because of what he was told and what he heard coming towards him, Dark Waters was terrified. Thankfully, the witness turned around and came back for him once he realized Dark Waters wasn't in the truck. Some of his stories, whether they involve dogmen or not, are difficult to believe, but they are usually compelling and certainly entertaining, and more often than not involve a what-if factor for me. Meaning, what if they are true? My favorite story is probably the Dogman Siege of Locket Ranch. It's a fairly long story that I won't get into now, but I will include a link to it on my page. So if we have all this testimony, if all these people are coming forward with their stories and claiming they're true, how much credence do we give them? Even if they obviously believe what they're saying, does that make it true? Let's talk about eyewitness testimony and our judicial system. The following is from an article called How Reliable is Eyewitness Testimony on the American Psychological Association's website by Zach Stambour. It was published in April of 2006. Mistaken or flawed identification has assumed a newfound prominence in recent years. It's been cited as a factor in nearly 78% of the nation's first 130 convictions later overturned by DNA testing, according to the New York-based Innocence Project, which works to free the wrongly convicted. And consider this. Taken from sciencemag.org, article called How Reliable is Eyewitness Testimony? Scientists Weigh In, by John Bohannon, published October the 3rd, 2014. Elizabeth Loftus, a psychologist at the University of California, Irvine, says, quote, "Just because someone says something confidently doesn't mean it's true," end quote. Jurors can't help but find an eyewitness's confidence compelling, even though experiments have shown that a person's confidence in their own memory is sometimes undiminished even in the face of evidence that their memory of an event is false. Okay, then. One more, taken from the Washington Post. This is an opinion piece called Eyewitnesses Aren't as Reliable as You Might Think, by Thomas Albright, a professor at the Salk Institute for Biological Studies, and Jed Rakoff, a federal district judge in the Southern District of New York. Articles published January 30th, 2015. Over the past quarter century, more than 1,400 people convicted of serious crimes have been proved innocent, according to the University of Michigan Law School's National Registry of Exonerations. But why were these people wrongly convicted? In a great many cases, one significant factor was faulty eyewitness identifications. Eyewitness testimony can be extremely powerful. When a witness with no motive to lie swears under oath that he or she personally saw a defendant commit a crime, it is hard not to believe the testimony. But in recent decades, extensive scientific research, which we reviewed while co-chairing the National Research Council committee that wrote the recent report, identifying the culprit, assessing eyewitness identification, have identified a number of factors that can lead an eyewitness to make a mistake. It is time our legal system started making use of this knowledge. Some of these factors, such as poor lighting or distractions, may seem obvious, but others, such as the effect of stress, are less so. Still other factors, such as the psychological influence of a police officer's body language as an eyewitness views a lineup, or how a witness's recollection of a person in a lineup can merge over time with memories of the original event, are so subtle that studies are only beginning to reveal their effects. Okay, so what does all that mean for our dogman witnesses? It's clear that mistaken identification is a problem in our legal system. It's possible these people are not seeing what they say, no matter how much they believe it, or how convincing they are. In the heat of the moment, it is possible that even someone who knows what a bear looks like, knows what a wolf looks like, sees a bear or a wolf and decides it's something else. What about a wolf on two legs? Well, there are plenty of videos out there of dogs walking on two legs, either because they've been trained to do so or because they have to. They've lost their front two legs or rear two legs to some kind of accident or out of medical necessity, or some are even born with only two legs. I'll include some links on my page. There are even pictures. I couldn't find any videos, but there are pictures of wolves standing on two legs. They aren't growling and looking like werewolves, but if they were ticked off or aggressive, it might look like what some of these people say they have seen. The article I just read specifically says that eyewitness testimony can be powerful. When someone swears an oath, we tend to believe it or want to believe it. So when I'm listening to these podcasts and someone swears up and down that what they're saying is true, it comes across. I don't think most of them are lying. Maybe some are. In fact, statistically speaking, odds are some of them are lying. But many of them have so much emotion in their voice that they absolutely have to believe what they're saying. Either that, or they absolutely deserve some kind of award for acting. Get them an Oscar. It's also possible that whoever's interviewing them encourages them with some leading questions. On the shows I listen to the most, the host will ask a question and then let the witness go. They tend to go on for quite a long time, retelling their story. Usually the host will wait till they come to a stop and then ask some clarifying questions. Poor lighting is also a factor. Most of these encounters take place at night. So if you have a snarling animal of some kind up on two legs, maybe your imagination runs away with you. I can tell you that I once was in a swimming pool as a kid. It was a swimming pool at a hotel where my mom worked. And I saw a trick of light that made it look like there was a shark in the pool. Now, yeah, it was just a reflection on the bottom of the pool. But my mind saw a shark. And this was after I'd seen Jaws. And I freaked out and swam to the side of the pool as fast as I could and got out. Then I realized what happened. I felt silly, but my fear in the moment wasn't any less real. I'll share another story that illustrates poor memory, specifically mine. My wife and I wrote our own wedding vows. Looking back on the moment, I am sure I went first. But I'm wrong. When we watched the DVD of our wedding, I was shocked to find the opposite was true. My memory insists I went first, but that just isn't the case. So essentially, it is highly possible that these witnesses are either mistaken or lying. Do I believe that? I'll wrap that up with my conclusion a bit later. Is there any evidence besides eyewitness testimony? Well, I've never seen anything I'd consider definitive. There's a site called the North American Dogman Project, and again, on all these sites I discuss, I'll have links on my page, that has an area for evidence and a spot for photos, but there aren't any pictures. They have some audio, but I don't hear anything that couldn't be a wolf or a dog or maybe even a coyote. There's a gentleman named Scott Carpenter who has made some interesting videos showing what he claims to be both Bigfoot and Dogman, separate videos. He goes for walks in forest areas with a camera facing front on his shoulder and a camera facing backwards. Therefore, he gets video of something that's behind him. If these creatures are as prevalent yet elusive as some believe, it could be a great way of acquiring unique footage. And he has plenty of videos and stills pulled from those videos of shapes in the trees or creatures in the trees. He claims to be a dogman, and in other videos a Bigfoot, and I think he has one of something he calls an alien. Now, I've watched some of his stuff, and honestly, I'm just not convinced. The definition of pareidolia is the human ability to see shapes or make pictures out of randomness. I think pareidolia explains most of his conclusions. There's a 2008 video available on YouTube called The Michigan Dogman Evidence. In it, experts in the fields of photography and animal care are consulted about their opinions on some pictures. There's also a video, which I will address shortly. It's worth watching, as they have both pictures they consider genuine and faked. They never say that, yes, this picture is of a dogman. They just state the picture is unaltered and the subject appears to be an animal on two legs. One of the photos has come to be called the Onaway photo. It was shot by a young man in the back of a van. They had gutted a couple of deer and left the entrails. As they backed up the vehicle to leave, the rear lights revealed a creature. The young man took a picture. It's freaky looking, and I'll post it on my site or post a link to it. The experts in the video are split about the photo's authenticity. I don't know if it's genuine or not. If it's real, the animal in it is rather terrifying. If it's not genuine, it's a pretty good fake. There's also a picture of the Beast of Seven Chutes. The animal in the picture may be a Bigfoot, it may be a dogman, it may be nothing. Some believe the subject is carrying a smaller animal. The picture is apparently genuine and unaltered, but as for the creature, well, it's in a very small part of a larger image. It's almost impossible to see in the original photo, but when it's enlarged and enhanced, it looks like there may be something there, sort of. It could be another simple case of pareidolia. And that's pretty much all I could find. Like I said, there's not much out there. Now, Vic Cundiff from the Dogman Encounters radio show and website has this to say. Quote, if you've invested an appreciable amount of time researching dogmen, but haven't seen any convincing evidence that supports their existence, it would be easy to think no good evidence exists. I can tell you, though, it does. Because of what I do, eyewitnesses share all sorts of great evidence they've collected with me. The fact you haven't seen it doesn't mean it's not out there. Most eyewitnesses who possess that kind of evidence don't want it released to the public. Amazing videos, pictures, and vocals of dogmen have all been shared with me. Impressive dogmen evidence most definitely does exist. End quote. Now, I enjoy Vic's show, but consider the source. He might be genuine, but then again, this show is a source of revenue. His monthly subscription fee is low, I think it's $2.99, and you, of course, can listen for free on YouTube, but that version of the show has ads, which means money. So, if I don't see any evidence, I can't be entirely convinced that this thing is real, can I? Well, maybe, maybe not. If these things exist, are they dangerous? Well, they're giant wolves who walk around on two legs with mouths full of razor-sharp teeth and giant claws on their hands. And most people who see them inevitably describe them as evil. They say they're afraid, they feel fear like they've never felt before. Some witnesses report feeling like the dog men feed off their fear and are trying to steal their souls. However, Linda Godfrey says, quote, I do not have a single report of any human being injured by a man-wolf beyond one man in Quebec who was scratched deeply on his hip and side, although many people have been thoroughly frightened by its aggressive actions and posture. It seems to be more of a scavenger and hunter of small game and deer. Its main aim, when encountered, is to get out of sight as quickly as possible. End quote. That seems in line with what we know about wolves in general. Vic Cundiff says, quote, "While I have spoken with credible witnesses who said they were attacked by dogmen, they represent an extremely small percentage of the eyewitnesses who have shared their encounters with me. Less than 1% of the eyewitnesses who have shared their encounters with me claimed to have been attacked by the dogman they encountered." End quote. That sounds like good news, doesn't it? Odds are if you see a wolf in the wild, it'll go its own way and won't attack you. But I'll say this. Dead men tell no tales. If these things go after someone and kill them and devour them, who's going to know? How many missing people are there in the world? How many missing people are there in state parks, national parks, and recreation areas? David Paulides, I apologize if I'm mispronouncing his name, Paulides, has written a series of books called Missing 411 that documents many cases of missing persons within our park system. I won't get into it here, but suffice it to say that there are some really strange things that have happened and continue to happen, and there is a shocking lack of record-keeping, oversight, and investigation. Am I saying that all disappearances, all missing people, are related to some giant, undiscovered predator of a wolf? Of course not. But if these creatures are real, they may be a factor. And if they are, maybe the story I find the scariest is true. It takes place in the National Recreation Area called the Land Between the Lakes in western Kentucky. It's between the Kentucky and Barclay Lakes, made up of more than 300 miles of shoreline, 170,000 acres of forest, and over 200 miles of walking trails. There are some variations on this tale, and I'll link to a website that has the text, as well as a YouTube channel that has an audio version, as told by the Bigfoot Crossroads show. Now, this is rather explicit, and while I won't go into all the details, even my summary will be rather gory, so consider yourself warned. It took place back in the 1980s. I don't have a specific year. There was a family camping in their motorhome, and the husband was outside leveling the vehicle. A dog man came out of the forest, attacked him, and literally ripped his head off. The creature then went inside the motorhome and killed the mother and son. A couple of other campers later came across the bodies. They panicked, went back to their car, drove to the nearest town, and called the authorities. As the site was investigated, clothing belonging to a little girl was found. However, authorities only had three bodies, mom, dad, and son. They searched the area and before long found the little girl's body, up in a tree. It had been fed upon. That's the gist of it. If you want to know more, feel free to do a search or check out the links I've posted. While that story may or may not be true, there have been some acknowledged hoaxes regarding dogmen. One of the first is referred to as the Cook Song, or the Michigan Dogman Song, or the Legend of the Dogman. In 1987, a disc jockey named Steve Cook, who worked at WTCM-FM in Traverse City, Michigan, recorded a song titled The Legend, which he played as an April Fool's Day joke. He based the song on myths and legends from around North America and had never actually heard of the Michigan Dogman. Quote, "I made it up completely from my own imagination as an April Fool's prank for the radio and stumbled my way to a legend that goes back all the way to Native American times." End quote. Now, here's the really funny part. After he played the song, Cook received calls from listeners who said they encountered a creature similar to the one described in the song. For a few weeks after he first played it, it was the most requested song on the station. He wound up selling cassettes of it for $4 a pop and donated proceeds from the single to an animal shelter. He says over the years, he's received more than 100 reports of the creature's existence. And yes, I've linked to the song. Earlier, I discussed the Michigan Dogman evidence video available on YouTube. The last thing discussed is called the Gable film. The video's conclusion about the Gable film is mixed. They can't decide wholeheartedly if the video is real or a hoax. Well, since then, Monster Quest, a show that aired on History Channel, which I actually enjoyed, has come out and said that the video is a hoax. They interviewed the gentleman who filmed it. It was a guy named Mike Agrusa, A-G-R-U-S-A. He was inspired by Steve Cook's Legend of the Dogman song. The film was shot on 8mm film and looks like something straight out of a 1970s home movie. The part that went viral and set the internet on fire was the sequence at the end where a dogman or a creature on all fours is filmed attacking the cameraman. When I watched the ending sequence for the first time, I did wonder, is that real? But the more you look at it, the more you realize it's probably faked. Now the kicker, at least to me, is there are people out there that still believe it's real. I was briefly part of a dogman group on Facebook, and they brought up the Gable film and considered that real evidence, and I posted and said, you guys know this is an acknowledged hoax, right? To my surprise, I received many replies stating that that's what they want you to believe, it's just a cover-up, the film is real, only believe what you can see with your own eyes, things like that, which only believe what you can see with your own eyes. That's amusing to say about a video you see on the internet. So where do I come down on this? Is the Dogman real? Well, before I reach my conclusion, I'd like to make two more points. First, new species are discovered constantly. I found a website that documents them, and it's interesting to see. Granted, there's no giant wolves, but there are some mammals and reptiles and birds, along with plants and fungi and invertebrates, and it's interesting to see. Yes, I'll post a link. Second, there are a number of real animals once believed to be myths. The list includes the Komodo dragon, the platypus, the manatee, the okapi, which looks odd, looks like a zebra and a deer mated, and the gorilla. The mountain gorilla was considered a myth until as recently as 1902. So how are those points relevant? Well, just because we don't have a specimen doesn't mean something isn't real. Stories about werewolves and dogmen go back centuries. They came from somewhere, and I don't believe they were told strictly to explain the unexplainable, nor only as a form of entertainment or as some kind of control. What do I mean by control? Well, if you have a kid who's slipping out at night, well, you tell him something to keep him home. Don't go out or the monster werewolves will get you. Something like that. There is a time in history when that would have been believed. And it's important to remember the best legends and tall tales are always rooted in truth. But still, I have not seen any convincing pictures or videos. Vic Cundiff says he has, and so have a few others I find credible. And countless witnesses have shared their encounters with writers and podcasters, and while I know eyewitness testimony is not always reliable, I don't believe all of them are lying or mistaken. Even if their memories are not accurate, people are seeing something that isn't normal. I've never seen a wolf outside a zoo, but I have seen foxes and coyotes. I never saw one walk around on two legs. And the animals I saw didn't strike me as aggressive, and they certainly didn't look anything like the creatures in Van Helsing or Underworld. People are seeing something that isn't supposed to exist, and sometimes it changes their lives. Some can no longer go camping or hunting because of the fear of another encounter, and some are stricken with a form of PTSD. Some don't talk about it for years because they're afraid of being ridiculed, and that makes it worse. Burying trauma never helps in the long run. Now, I'm fascinated by the topic, obviously. I've written a book about a kid who finds and bonds with a dogman puppy. I'm going to self-publish the book and its accompanying audiobook sometime this year. I enjoy witness stories, and I find myself believing some of them. Most often, it's something about the witness, what they say and how they say it. I've heard people say truth has a ring to it, a certain quality of sound. I don't know if that's true, pun intended, sort of. But presentation is important. Do I want to believe these stories? I'm not sure. I'll say this, though. If there are giant bipedal wolves that look like monster werewolves in our world, I do not want to see one. So, do they exist? Is there something out there that isn't like any kind of creature we have in a zoo? I think so. I think there is something out there. Something that scares the hell out of almost everyone who sees it. Something that isn't supposed to be real. Something with a growl or a howl or scream that makes the primitive caveman in us cower in front of the campfire, hoping it never, ever finds us. But that's just my opinion, and I could be wrong.
That's what I think, but I could be wrong. That's what I thought when I wrote this song. I say what I believe, and I say it's wrong. That's what I think, but I could be wrong.
Thank you for listening to Season 1, Episode 1 of my podcast, That's What I Think, But I Could Be Wrong, Dogman, Fact or Fiction. If you enjoyed it, please tell all your friends, share it on whatever social media sites you use, give me a positive rating and review to help me grow the podcast, and I'll appreciate it. If you didn't like it, well, try another episode. Maybe you'll like it better. Now, I've decided I'm going to conclude each podcast with one of my songs, and it only makes sense to end the first episode with the song that inspired the podcast. Thanks again for listening, and be good.
So, let me get this straight. You want me to believe that this country was founded on the ideals of a few brave men? Well, those who preached all men are created equal were wealthy men, and they owned slaves. And the Constitution was written not in an effort to preserve democracy, but to centralize it into the hands of a more powerful government. Now, don't get me wrong, I love my country, and the ideals we're taught to believe and hold dear. I'm just tired of the elite preserving their own power by selling dreams and lies to those they view as beneath them. Hey, that's just my opinion, and I could be wrong.
That's what I think, but I could be wrong. That's what I thought when I wrote this song. I say what I believe, and I say it's wrong. That's what I think, but I could be wrong.
Let me get this straight. You want me to believe that Oswald acted alone? And Sirhan Sirhan? What about James Earl Ray or John Hinckley Jr.? John Wilkes Booth or Mark David Chapman? It looks like we have a lot of lone nut assassins running around our history, usually killing off the most popular and protected men in our country. You'd think we would have learned to protect these folks from those that would do them harm. After all, it's not like there's some kind of secret society plotting world domination while they bring the towers down. It's not like we have a bunch of illuminated stonecutters participating in bizarre rituals in some grove, planning how the world will progress. Besides, we have elections. High government officials aren't selected by those who have true power. We the people have the power. Unless maybe we're asleep. But that's just my opinion. I could be wrong.
That's what I think, but I could be wrong. That's what I thought when I wrote this song. I say what I believe, and I say it strong. That's what I think, but I could be wrong.
let me get this straight. You want me to believe that some polygamous cult down in Texas warranted continual national news coverage at a time when our nation was at war in two different countries? Where was all this coverage when it was discovered that the raid on that compound was precipitated by a fake phone call from some woman with an axe to grind? And what about those folks down in Waco a few years ago? You want me to believe that they started a war with Janet Reno and the ATF and the FBI? Whatever happened to the idea of religious freedom in this country? What, it's okay for a science fiction writer to develop a multi-level pyramid scam and dupe countless people out of countless sums of money? And it's okay for televangelists to beg for money while they bang hookers before Jesus calls them home? But we can't have folks live off the grid and keep to themselves because they represent some kind of threat? Well, you know, I think that's all pretty messed up. But I could be wrong.
That's what I think, but I could be wrong. That's what I thought when I wrote this song. I say what I believe and I say it strong. That's what I think, but I could be wrong. That's what I think, but I could be wrong. We're losing the fight, but it's not quite done. It's always darkest just before the dawn. That's what I think.